This product is rated everyone 10 and up.
Welcome to the Civilization 5 podcast series. I'm Elizabeth Toby, and today I talk with Scott Lewis and John Schaefer about the people you'll meet over the course of a game, and who will, potentially, be able to help you conquer the world. I start with perhaps the most important people to help you on your quest, your advisors. Advisors have appeared in Civ games throughout the years in varying capacities. And for the fifth iteration of the series, the team had a very clear picture of what they wanted to do.
My name is Scott Lewis, and I guess my title, I'm hand-waving right now, my title, I guess, is gameplay programmer and sort of designer person, and I made a lot of the designer advisors. John really had a clear vision at the beginning of the game to have these advisors direct the player through the game and to help them through the game, and there's four different advisors sort of directing you through the four different victory types. There's a military advisor, economic advisor, foreign advisor, and science advisor. What we really wanted is somebody that was on the player's side that was helping them out and sort of like giving them good advice. And they play sort of, I guess, two roles in the game. One is to sort of introduce them into the player into the game and be like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what this means. This is what that means. We also have in the when you build a unit or choose attack, we'll say this is what this advisor wants, so that you're not. It's not just saying this is what's best for the game. That you say this is what's best for you militarily, or this is what's best for your economy, or this is best for your for diplomacy. And also we have what I call the advisor council screen, where the advisors will sort of look at what's going on and give you feedback on what they think about the situation. And, I mean, I really wanted the player to feel like they had, friends in the game, people that were on their side. Because in a lot of times in these type of games, you feel kind of isolated, where it's like you have a whole bunch of people trying to kill you. And who's on your side helping you out? And I saw it as the advisors.
Advisors are not all the same. Depending on how you play the game, and more importantly, who you play as, their wisdom will be different. And they may have insights that go far beyond the obvious. They are not mere tutorials, and they do more than hold your hand. They know the secrets of each civ that will be useful for your ultimate goal of winning.
We do take into account each culture, each civilization has their unique units and unique buildings. And the advisors will be like, hey, you need to research horseback riding because you get these, the companion cavalry. And it's like, and they'll know where the good stuff is. And they'll know through our awesome flavor AI system, what's sort of good for you. And they'll talk about it and be like, if you research this, you'll get access to that. So they do have awareness of the unique abilities of each civilization.
Regardless of how interesting or knowledgeable Civilization 5 advisors may be, some of you may not want to hear what they have to say all the time. Or, as you play the game, you may want to hear only parts of their advice. After all, you are the ruler. You should be able to control what your helpers have to say, and when.
Yes, you can control how much they talk. So if you, or actually they interrupt you. Initially, for the tutorial, we wanted as much hands-off as possible, because I feel like Civ is a great, one of the strengths of Civ is that it starts very simple and sort of snowballs into a larger game, and aspects of the game are introduced. We try to make it at a really elegant pace, but still people may have problems with issues. Problems with understanding things. So we have the advisors come up at certain times. Some people are like, I already know how to move units. I already know to found a city. Leave me alone. Beginning players are going to need that information. Whereas experienced players, you can go in the options panel and say, I know how to play Civ. Leave me alone. but the advisors, well, you can say, tell me only the new stuff, and they'll only talk about, like, how range combat works, how one unit per tile works, and, like, sort of new systems to the game work. So the people who know how to play Civ, know about cities, and know about workers, aren't going to be nagged to death. But that information is still very useful to new players. So we didn't want to... It's a hard line to walk, and please, when you play at home, use that options drop-down to set it to your experience level, because it helps.
Advisors clearly explained. Scott and I now divert to a slightly different topic, happiness. We've talked about happiness in Civ 5 before, and while happiness is not a person that can help you win Civ 5 by any means, there is a reason I'm asking about it. Just stick with me for a minute.
Happiness in Civ 5 is it serves a similar role to what it did in previous Civ games, where it's kind of a limiter on the player's growth in their cities. But it also serves as now a limiter on their expansion as well. We kind of wanted to roll those both into one number, I guess. In previous games, there were various ways of controlling expansion, from corruption in the earlier games to maintenance in Civ 4. And we wanted to do something a little bit different, where it wasn't so cut and dry how much you could expand before you kind of ground down. So happiness allows you to grow your cities either really big or really wide, but not both at the same time very well. You have to increase your happiness of your empire to allow you to continue to expand or continue to grow. So keeping that balance is important. You have a few different ways of increasing your happiness, from hooking up resources, which are on the land, so that's kind of a way to gain more happiness by expansion. Or you have certain social policies that you can adopt that will increase your happiness. That's kind of a cultural way of increasing it. Or there are certain buildings that you can construct that will improve it, and that's kind of a growth way. If you have really big cities that can build stuff quick, then you can go that route. So there's different ways of getting more happiness, but you kind of have to balance that against everything else that you're doing in the game.
John's overview of happiness brings me back to people who will help you in Civ 5, the citizens of your empire. They are people, and they do help you to win. But to make sure they help you to the fullest extent possible, you have to keep them happy. More than that, you have to utilize them well so they are effectively achieving your goals. And you have to know about specialists.
Specialists are something that's not really new to Civ 5 by any stretch. They were in previous Civ games. And we wanted to keep the great people as kind of they were in Civ 4, where they have different roles and had different things that they could do. So that's a system that we've kind of carried from Civ 4. We have made some changes to it, though. With regards to specialists, instead of just having a general plus or minus, you can add them, remove them, whatever. And the number that you can add is based on a lot of different factors. The way we've set it up is that buildings now have different numbers of slots for specialists. So, for example, the temple might have one or two slots for a particular grape or a particular specialist. And once you do have a specialist assigned, they work very similar to how they worked in Civ 4, where they increase, you know, culture or science or production or whatever. And they also contribute great people points to the pool. Unlike Civ 4, there are now individual pools for each type of great person. So instead of there being a random roll when the big pool fills up and says, well, you got 50% science, you got 1% culture, and 49% production, here's your great artist. The great person created is now based on filling up that particular great person pool in that city. So it gives the player a little bit more control over exactly how he wants to develop in that part of the game. Similar to Civ 4 as well, the wonders all contribute, so you can kind of mix and match those with the specialists to produce great people in different ways. Each one has three different abilities, I guess you could say. One of them is just some special power that's unique to that type of great person. So, for example, the great scientist can research a free tech He's now the only one that can do that in Civ 5, whereas in Civ 4, any of them could research a tech of a different type, but now only the great scientists can research techs. They can all also build a special tile improvement on the map. So the great artist, for example, can build a landmark, or the great general can construct a citadel, which will give a really big defense bonus and also damage enemy units that are stationed next to it. So it's kind of an offensive and a defensive benefit. And they can all also start a golden age. It only takes one great person to start a golden age now. It's different from Civ 4, but the number of turns that they last goes down with each one you use. So you kind of have to plan ahead when you're going to use different types at different moments instead of just needing to get more and more. There's a little more strategy in terms of how you use them for that. Scott wants to talk about the great artist.
Do you want to talk about the other like special abilities? Because I think they're really cool.
Nah, we'll let people wait. They'll find out.
Okay, great artist is super evil. And I totally love it. Because what he can do is you move him slowly up. You don't have to move him slowly, but I like to. Move him slowly up to your borders where you share borders with another civ. And you can, is it just called culture bomb? Like, you press the culture bomb button, and what you do is you take their plots. And you take them for yourself, and they really can't get them back without, conquering your city. And that's going to probably cause a war that'll destroy everybody, but it's really fun to do. it's so evil. I mean, there's nothing worse than taking somebody's land, really. What I also like is it's not like, okay, maybe your borders will push somebody back, maybe not. You're just going to get the tiles, no questions asked. I mean, you won't get cities, obviously, but it's really mean. Because if you take someone's uranium or oil, that's just hateful. So, and that's why it's fun.
Scott, poor Scott, whenever we play multiplayer, all he does is produce great artists. It worked the first game, but it hasn't been so successful since.
Oh, well.
Before I let John and Scott head back into the dev studio, I asked them to impart any final knowledge they had for those listening to the podcast, nuances of the game that could help people get ahead.
Well, in terms of just general economic progression, I touched on it a little bit with the happiness, about having good balance. And that's kind of important across the game as well. The two factors that kind of are intertwined in the sense are happiness, which we talked about, and gold. We've talked in the past about how gold is more important in Civ, in Civ 5, and that plays a big role because you have to manage your expenses in addition to where you're getting your money from and how you want to spend it. So there's a number of things you can do to spend money, from purchasing items, buildings, and units, to befriending city-states, to buying land, whatever. But if you have too many expenses, then you're not going to be able to do those cool things. And one of the big trade-offs in the game is in order to produce more happiness, there are a number of buildings that can do that, like the Colosseum, but they tend to be pretty expensive. So if you're gonna play the game a certain way, and let's say you run into happiness problems, well, you can construct Colosseums, but it's going to cost you money, and now you're out of money, so you have to get money. So it's something that kind of goes back and forth, and you have to keep a close eye on how both of those are going. So it's a challenge to keep both of them in good shape at the same time. It makes it fun, particularly in the mid to late game.
Also, watch out for the Iroquois. Know when you're playing against the Iroquois, and be very careful when you attack them, because they can move very fast. That's one thing. It's not, sometimes you're like, okay, this guy's ticking me off, I'm going to declare war on him. Check before you declare war. Make sure it's Hiawatha up there. And make sure you really want to do that, because they can be pretty vengeful. I like them a lot.
Scott's all about vengeance.
It's really, I mean,
why can't you just be happy?
It's a pretty incredible, I love the Iroquois power, which is being able to move through jungles and trees in your territory as if it's a road. And it just allows your military units just to fly from one side to the other. And, you know, if you declare a war on a march, you'll lure army in, you'll get every single defensive unit right next to you almost immediately. And it's terrifying. So, but when you're playing Iroquois, it's like, bring it, you know. It's like, I got a big empire, I can run everybody right over. And so, I don't know, I love the Iroquois. And just be aware of who you're playing against.
And so ends this episode of the Civilization V podcast series. As always, we've barely scratched the surface of these topics. It seems whenever we go into strategy, not enough can ever be said. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with a 13th episode.